Narcissists have this way of exploiting your need for connection. It's part of how they get you stuck in toxic relationships and feeling like you can't leave in the first place, even if money or family isn't an issue. See, as humans, we are wired to connect with other humans. In fact, according to scientist Matthew Lieberman, author of the 2013 book Social, it is as necessary for us as food and water. He notes that social pain, as in being snubbed or having someone say hurtful things to you in a social setting, can be as real to us as physical pain. Lieberman points out that phrases such as "that breaks my heart" or "that hurts my feelings" are cultural evidence of the fact that emotional pain is so significant. While we might not like it, our well-being as humans is literally directly affected in profound ways by our connections to other people. He says social pain is real pain, so not connecting can be as detrimental to our physical and mental health as not eating healthy food. And this is confirmed by the Canadian Mental Health Association, which notes in a 2019 report that connecting with other people is far more important than we might think. In fact, we are told that social connection can lower anxiety and depression, help us regulate our emotions, lead to higher self-esteem and empathy, and actually improve our immune systems. So literally, by not connecting with other people, we put our health at risk. In other words, the evidence shows that we need to connect with people in order to be relatively healthy. But when you're dealing with a narcissist in a toxic relationship, you might find yourself isolated and feeling very alone. Worse, narcissists seem to instinctively exploit our basic human need for connection, and they use this to control and manipulate us. How? Well, let's talk about it. So, do you remember the time when you first met your narcissistic ex and you thought that they were your soulmate? You could not believe that everything you loved, they loved, and everything you didn't like, they also didn't like. And then they would be so sweet and charming until their narcissistic side came out anyway. At first, they were like a dream come true for you, and they became, eventually, your worst nightmare. But what you didn't know then is that the narcissist, they had their own underlying psychological issues, likely starting in early childhood. It has a whole lot to do with the fact that their mothers, I know if it's not one thing, it's your mother, but their mothers and their attachment style. I'm going to insert a quick clip from a recent video right here to explain exactly what I mean. Then I'll be right back here to explain how all of this is connected. So stick with me and take a look. Attachment is defined as a deep and enduring emotional bond that connects one person to another person. Attachment theory basically helps us to understand our relationships and how our relationships with our mothers could affect us and our lifelong development, and even our relationships with others in really profound ways. This is where you might actually find a narcissist. Someone with a dismissive avoidant attachment style certainly appears to be emotionally independent and is likely often a little bit afraid of committing to a relationship with a single person long term. So they have commitment issues, right? They would have had parents who were either not around a lot or were negligent in their care in other ways. They might have been ignored or abandoned or undervalued in childhood. They felt rejected, they felt not good enough, they felt unwanted, and one or both parents might have been completely absent for this person. Their needs may have been partially served, but not fully. For example, maybe they got plenty of food and they were bathed on a regular basis, they had clean clothes, but nobody held them, or at least not often enough. They might also have been rejected by their peers as they got older, and they might have lived their lives feeling just not good enough entirely. This would leave them afraid to trust people in general, and as a result, they might be really likely to be dismissive of other people. They tend to cover up their insecurity with a sort of false sense of self-confidence. But when someone is dismissive avoidant and they manage to find a secure, loving relationship and they take the time to work through their own issues, well, they actually can manage to have healthy relationships. But unfortunately, for most narcissists, they don't develop the emotional maturity to do that, and they stay stuck in that attachment style. Let's talk about which attachment style the narcissist represents, shall we? As I mentioned earlier, while technically a narcissist might classify themselves under any of these categories, they're most typically identified as the dismissive avoidant attachment style, which is why they maintain a certain distance when it comes to their relationships and why they make you feel like you're unwanted or unneeded, even if they clearly depend on you completely for narcissistic supply and, well, anything else. The dismissive avoidant style leads to being overly self-reliant, or appearing to be that way, and downplaying the importance of relationships. But they're quite vulnerable when it comes to a big crisis because they don't handle a crisis very well. Now, they may have a super inflated opinion of themselves, and they can be very critical and suspicious of other people, which makes their relationships pretty miserable for anyone involved. Now, this is where you're going to find the overt narcissist, or the more kind of in-your-face narcissist anyway. But the covert narcissist can actually fall into the avoidant, fearful style, which seems a little counterintuitive since their victims can also fall into this category. So let's talk about the wild card attachment style, which is fearful avoidant. Many people who could be classified as codependent might fall into the fearful avoidant attachment style. As adults, fearful avoidant types might become overly dependent on their relationships. While they might have had similar experiences in childhood, the difference between whether someone becomes a narcissist or a more empathic type of codependent would depend on how they deal with their own childhood experience when they are the fearful avoidant type. In either case, those who could be classified as fearful avoidant, they tend to be absolutely terrified of rejection, and they are constantly dealing with inner conflict. They sometimes thrive on drama, and they are nearly always suffering from low self-esteem. They are definitely prone to anxiety when it comes to relationships, whether they're super clingy or they're constantly avoiding intimacy. So how is it that a codependent people pleaser could potentially fall into the same category as a covert narcissist? Well, it is the codependency factor. Both narcissists and their victims could be, according to psychologists, considered codependent because at its most basic level, codependency represents someone who has sort of lost themselves or never found it in the first place. Even though the narcissist cannot really feel compassionate and emotional empathy, they certainly can watch and learn what you like and how you want and need a connection. The narcissist can really only express cognitive empathy or superficial empathy or agenda-driven empathy. They just know that you have a need for connection and they're going to do anything they can to exploit it, but why would they do that? How would it benefit a narcissist to exploit your need for connection? I got two words for you. Narcissistic supply. They need it and they will do whatever they need to do to get it, including pretending to care about you and expressing false empathy. Just for reference, I'm going to show you a quick section of a recent video where I talked about this in detail, and then we're going to talk more about exactly how the narcissist uses your need for connection against you. The fact is that narcissists cannot put themselves into your shoes. They cannot understand any type of pain that you feel because they're not capable of it on an emotional level. But this explanation isn't quite thorough enough because it leaves so many of us wondering, but what about all those times they did seem to be empathetic? How is that possible? So I know what you're thinking. If narcissists are not empathetic, then how could they ever act like they are? Isn't this how empathy works? To be aware of and to choose your actions based on someone else's feelings, or at least the understanding of those feelings? Well, yes and no. What is false empathy then? Well, false empathy is sadly used as a manipulation tactic by narcissists when they want something from you. Since you value connection and empathy, as most non-narcissists do, the narcissist knows it will help them get what they want from you. So they pretend to care how you feel. See, when it comes to narcissists, they are unable to feel emotional and compassionate empathy. But at the same time, they're well aware of the fact that other people value empathy, and because of that, they might demonstrate false empathy. Wait, what? Yeah, this is why it's so confusing and so difficult to detect a narcissist early in a relationship. Let's talk about the narcissist's sort of empathy deficit, shall we? Here's the thing. When we say narcissists have no empathy, we don't necessarily mean that they're not capable of figuring out how you feel. What we mean is that narcissists don't feel empathy in the same way as most people do. They have no compassion, no remorse, and they don't feel regret unless they regret a choice they made because it negatively affected them in some way. So in other words, the narcissist is capable of understanding exactly what you think or feel on a cognitive level, but not an emotional one. They can think about what someone else is feeling, but it doesn't affect their emotional state directly, nor does it play a part in how they treat the other person. The exception is when the narcissist thinks someone feels negatively about them. This situation will make them feel angry, offended, and generally upset, and that usually manifests itself in narcissistic rage and narcissistic injury. The truth is that while narcissists find it very easy to learn the motions on how to appear empathetic, they're usually just imitating what they've seen others doing, and that is exactly when they're using false empathy. So let's talk about how narcissists tend to exploit your need for connection. We're going to talk about the methods that they use to do exactly that. Number one, they idealize you. Most of us who end up in long-term relationships with narcissists could admit that we have experienced at least some form of trauma in our childhood. Often our childhood experiences led us to become people pleasers or codependents. In so many cases, we also don't truly see our value, and we have rarely experienced unconditional love, and we don't know how it feels to have someone who's really on our side. And we've rarely been given the opportunity to be the center of anyone's attention. And if we have, it has often been short-lived and, let's say, spotty at best, or for the wrong reasons. But when you first meet a narcissist and they see you as a good source of supply, well, everything changes. The allure of love bombing and idealization, oh my gosh, it's powerful. Because for those of us who have had difficult upbringings or who didn't feel loved and seen by others, the kind of validation and perceived love that we get in the beginning of a toxic relationship, it's literally like a drug. It feels incredible, and it brings out all sorts of feel-good neurotransmitters in us. And since narcissists are so intense, we think we've practically won the lottery of soulmates. We are walking on air. Not only will some narcissists go to extremes when they woo you, but during that idealization phase, they can literally make you feel like the most important thing in the world. And when you've spent most of your life feeling like you aren't important or you don't really matter, no one sees you, yeah, you're gonna fall in love and fast. And how can you possibly run away from that since it all feels like such a wonderful dream? This is how they trap you, and you almost can't help but fall for it because you're just being treated like royalty. But all that is before the other shoe drops, which brings me to my next point, number two, then they devalue you. Yeah, once the narcissist has you in their trap, they're gonna show you their true colors. They know you value your side of the relationship, and they're gonna keep you as a source of supply as long as possible. And this is around the time that they start to notice you have flaws. See, during that love bombing and idealization phase, the narcissist is enamored with you. They can only see the good things about you. And since they do lack object constancy, the moment they decide that you are in fact human with flaws and they begin to mentally tally them up, the person you met initially seems to disappear. They start to criticize you, they think less of you, and they tell you all about it one way or another. You'll start to be confused. You're gonna try to figure out what you're doing wrong, and you'll do things to try to change yourself to be better for them or whatever, and you'll think it's all your fault. And that is partially because this is exactly what the narcissist wants you to think. Plus, you're gonna find that even when you do fix something the narcissist complains about, they're inevitably gonna find something else that's wrong with you. So you can't win. And as you might imagine, this is when they start to instill fear into you and make you feel insecure. And this is where the heavy-hitting manipulation tactics like gaslighting start to come into play, the devalue phase. All of this ends up confusing you to the point that you literally start to feel like you don't know which way is up. You feel like you're not capable of making your own choices, and inevitably, you might lean on the narcissist more and more for affirmation of any decision you have to make. So, as you might imagine, you become increasingly dependent on the narcissist, despite the fact that they become increasingly cruel and negligent of you and the relationship you're in. They will play with your thoughts and feelings, but will keep you feeling afraid to do anything against their wishes because they also know at this point that you would never leave them just because you need that connection. They exploit that. You are dependent on them, and they will abuse it. They will abuse you. And that means at some point you'll fight back. And this provides them with the supply they need because even negative attention is still attention for a narcissist. That brings me to number three, the new supply situation. Even in a long-term relationship, isn't it true that narcissists always seem to be on the lookout for more supply, better supply, new supply? And though not all narcissists are cheaters, many or maybe most are. And regardless of the level of commitment they've promised you and to which they've caused you to become obligated, the narcissist can easily disappear if they find a new source of narcissistic supply, at least temporarily. And this is true even if they are still in a relationship with you, unfortunately. At this point, they might have even been cheating before to find the new source in the first place, because they couldn't possibly jump from one branch of a tree before they've got a good handle on the next. Or, to put it more directly, they can't be alone, so in most cases, a narcissist will hold on to you while they're looking for their next victim. And of course, before they discard you, they will appear to act indifferent to you, which will make you even more anxious. This is yet another way the narcissist exploits your need for human connection. See, because they know you fear that they will leave you, and they often do, they will manipulate you by giving intermittent reinforcement during this time. This is where they give you tiny glimpses of kindness, of love, and of that person you originally signed up to be with. You know what I'm talking about, right? Those little crumbs of affection, just enough to keep you hooked and intermittently sprinkled in between bouts of gaslighting and other forms of emotional and psychological abuse. That's what I'm talking about. Often this is gonna lead to the narcissist ghosting you without warning, which will inevitably leave you confused. And if you are already dependent on them as it is, it's gonna leave you feeling frazzled, to put it mildly. A lot of times what they want is for you to chase after them and to beg them to come back. And if you don't, just wait. Many, if not most, they're gonna come back around looking for more supply from you. That's called the Hoover maneuver, and it means exactly what it sounds like. Just like a vacuum cleaner, the narcissist will try to suck you back in. You might even fall for it thanks to that need for connection. With all of that being said, the best thing you can do for yourself if this happens to you is to never go back to a narcissist who discards you. If you are able to, you need to go no contact. So you block them from your phone and your platform, social media platforms, etc. And if you can't go no contact because you have kids with this person, well, you can always go low contact, which means you can just only communicate with them about the business of raising the kids and never about emotional stuff. Don't share your emotions with them. In any case, whatever you do, do your best to avoid accepting them back into your life or your inner circle if they hoover. Remember that ultimately, they are just exploiting your need for connection in order to feed their need for narcissistic supply. You, my friend, deserve so much more than that. So this brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, has a narcissist ever exploited your need for connection? If so, how did that play out and how did you deal with it? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below, and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm gonna leave for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit the subscribe button right over there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.